and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the closing of Three Floyds Brew Pub. Brandon Smith reports Governor Eric Holcomb unveiled his agenda for 2021. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, Tammy Silverman. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Earlier this week, Three Floyds told pub investors it is permanently closing its landmark brew pub in Munster, a decision that was not made easily. The Regent Stable has been a major draw to Northwest Indiana for years. The craft brewery plans to continue to brew craft beer that's distributed across the Midwest and is widely available across Northwest Indiana as well as the greater Chicagoland area. It also will continue to offer curbside pickup in Munster. Before the pandemic, the brewery recently opened a new distillery and distillery tap room. For many years, it had been planning a massive multi-million dollar expansion of its operations that would have added more than 100,000 square feet in brewery space, plus an additional 14,000 square feet in retail and restaurant space. Founded in Hammond in 1996, Three Floyds built a huge following with its acclaimed Indian Pale Ales and other craft beers, heavy metal aesthetic, and not normal attitude. Its brew pub, tucked into an industrial park, drew many visitors across Chicago and across the world, especially during the annual Dark Lord Day Festival. It was repeatedly named a finalist for the prestigious James Beard Awards, which are often described as the Oscars of the restaurant world. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Community Hospital in Munster administered its first round of vaccines Tuesday morning. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Angiano reports, hospital officials warn the fight against COVID-19 is far from over.
Dr. Alan Kumar with Community says they expect to receive 2,000 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine by the end of the week. He says Community has already started thinking of their approach to a larger-scale vaccination effort, and that includes battling misinformation related to the vaccine.
The first thing we want to do is educate our physicians, our nurses, our staff at the hospital, so that they understand the value of this vaccine and they can help us spread the word.
Kumar says the vaccine's arrival may bring hope that the end of the pandemic is near, but everyone needs to continue being careful. That means wearing masks, socially distancing, and practicing good hygiene. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Angiano.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. With some exceptions, Indiana employers can legally require workers to be vaccinated for COVID-19. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports that probably won't happen anytime soon due to several factors, including a limited supply.
The only protected exemptions to mandatory worker vaccination would be those who can't get it due to a medical condition or those who refuse it based on a sincerely held religious belief. In those cases, employers would still have to offer reasonable accommodations instead. Amy Adelaide is an attorney specializing in employment law. She says places like hospitals or even schools might require vaccinations in the future, but expects it won't happen right away. Part of that is due to a fear of staffing shortages if workers refuse to comply.
You know, I have seen some polls that suggest that some employers will require it, but even those that I'm talking to in healthcare are saying that they don't plan to make it mandatory at this time.
Adelaide adds, it's uncertain whether employers who require vaccination could be protected from lawsuits if workers experience side effects. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Indiana plans to use the bulk of its remaining federal COVID-19 relief dollars to pay off a federal unemployment loan. The state has around $600 million left of the federal CARES Act money it received earlier this year. And without an extension, that money must be spent on expenses directly related to the pandemic incurred by the end of December. Office of Management and Budget Director Chris Johnston says the plan is to use $400 million to pay off a loan the state had to take out from the federal government to cover the sharp increase in unemployment benefits.
We believe it is prudent to make a deposit to avoid that borrowing.
Meanwhile, a third of Hoosier restaurants say they won't be open in 6 months, and a national forecaster says the number of Hoosiers struggling to pay rent or mortgages is a red flag for Indiana. Governor Eric Holcomb says the state is considering those needs for the remainder of its relief dollars.
We're looking at restaurants and our hospitality sector and ways that we can help, not just down the stretch, but into the future as well.
Justin says the state is also working through a wait list for housing assistance and could provide more money if needed.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Governor Eric Holcomb unveiled his agenda for 2021 Thursday, one which focuses more on studying, assessing, and extending previously announced initiatives than taking new actions. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Holcomb does propose increased funding to K-12 schools and restoring higher education budgets.
Holcomb's push to increase K-12 funding and restore higher ed comes after a new revenue forecast projects little to no new money in the next state budget. Holcomb says further federal relief dollars will be vital to helping make his state budget proposals possible.
These are our priorities, and if we're able, this is what we will deliver.
Holcomb pushed back on the idea that the bulk of his agenda isn't new initiatives.
To say, well, there's not a lot of new, this is what we need to do to continue to stay on the road that we're on to grow.
Holcomb also hopes to secure workplace accommodations for pregnant workers, a push that failed last year, and further expand the state's broadband program, though he's not asking for more money for that effort. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Governor's Teacher Compensation Commission unveiled its reports on teacher pay Monday, including a list of more than 30 recommendations to raise educator salaries. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains the recommendations are designed for lawmakers and local schools to consider.
The commission's report says a competitive average teacher salary for Indiana lands at about $60,000 a year. That's nearly $9,000 more than the current average and would take an investment of more than $600 million. Commission Chairman Mike Smith says elected officials, schools, and education groups all have a role to play.
It's a daunting task, and it's going to require action and cooperation by all of us.
The commission recommends lawmakers consider things like a minimum teacher salary and paying off even more pension debt to free up additional funding. The group also recommends schools join the state's prescription purchasing plan and pursue referendum funding to increase their revenue. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The COVID-19 surge is putting a strain on hospitals and healthcare workers across the Midwest. And some people are delaying routine medical treatment because they are worried about the disease. SideEffects Public Media's Darian Benson reports that could lead to more serious health problems.
Megan Miedema is a mother of two in Chicago. In October, she started to feel back pain but was hesitant to go to the doctor. She worried about getting COVID-19 and bringing it back home.
If you go to the hospital, obviously, there are, you know, a lot of people at that hospital, and I feel like it would be a place that I wouldn't want to go. There's just an increased risk for COVID.
When the pain became unbearable, she finally made an appointment. She was diagnosed with shingles, a virus that causes a painful rash.
They can't really do a lot to treat shingles. What they do is they put you on an antiviral. And I think because I had delayed going, I didn't catch it soon enough. The antiviral didn't really help. And like my shingles were pretty painful.
Many Americans are making similar choices. A September report by the CDC found that by June, about 40% of adults delayed or avoided medical care due to COVID concerns. This lines up with data from the start of the pandemic, when there was a 23% decline in ER visits for heart attacks and a 20% decline for strokes. But doctors say it is important for patients to stay on top of medical care, even amid the current COVID surge.
Wellness exams are important. These are the exams where we do the things such as pap smears, which help prevent cervical cancer. This is the time where we do those breast exams and order those mammograms and do the colon cancer and prostate cancer screening.
That's Dr. Bernard Richard, a primary care physician in Greenfield, Indiana. He has seen patients delay medical care for strokes, heart attacks, and cancer. He says some patients don't want to overwhelm the healthcare system while frontline workers are fighting COVID. Ryan Gates lives in Indianapolis with her 18-month-old son. She has delayed non-essential wellness appointments.
I know health professionals are very overwhelmed right now. I've seen that, and I just know that if what I'm going in for is not a necessity, then it's just not needed right now.
Gates makes exceptions for office visits that are important for her son's health.
I think his every few month visits are necessities just because I know he's on a vaccination schedule that he needs to stick to. Other than that, if it wasn't something that he absolutely needed, definitely would not be going in. All about virtual visits right now if I were to need them, and same for him.
Hospitals across the Midwest are nearing capacity as COVID cases surge. In early December, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb delayed non-emergency surgeries. He says this will help free up hospital beds, but he urges residents to not delay medical treatment.
If you have a serious medical condition, you should go see your doctor now. Don't just seek it, get it, the attention, if you need it.
Richard says when people delay care, they get sicker. And that is what will put stress on hospitals.
When you get sicker, you will need a higher level of care, such as a hospital emergency department or being admitted to the hospital. So working hard to take care of yourself all along and keeping yourself healthy enough to where you don't need emergency care is something that will truly help us and help our healthcare system right now.
For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Darian Benson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. COVID-19 can be especially dangerous for people living with diabetes. And medical experts are realizing that relationship between the diseases is very complex. Side Effects Public Media's Farah Usri reports.
I love you. So many germs. Kids are yucky. Not kids.
Agatha Walston leads a busy life. She's a nurse in southern Indiana and a single mother of two young kids. Still, she's kept control of her type 1 diabetes for over 28 years. But when the pandemic hit, she feared that could be unraveling.
I sat down with him and I said, okay, there's this super killer virus on the loose. And I'm a nurse and I will probably get it. That was a really hard conversation to have with the kids to make sure that they knew that, you know, if mom goes, they're still going to have each other. I'm sorry.
People living with diabetes are not more likely to get COVID-19, but they're at a much greater risk of developing severe symptoms and complications. A COVID study in England examined more than 20,000 deaths and found that a third of those people were diabetic. In mid-April, Walston tested positive. She survived without hospitalization, but months later, she noticed new health issues. She was diagnosed with high cholesterol, elevated blood pressure, heart problems, and glaucoma, a condition that could cause blindness.
The glaucoma specialist, he had said, you know, you're already at risk for glaucoma, so we won't know if it was COVID or diabetes.
Walston's other doctors are unsure if COVID is behind any of these complications or if her diabetes was a contributing factor. But Walston is far from the only diabetic battling health complications from a COVID infection.
So even if your blood glucose control is perfect, you're still going to have some risks.
This is Dr. Carmela Evans-Molina, director of the Diabetes Research Center at Indiana University. She says that COVID has the power to elevate blood sugar levels and cause insulin resistance even in previously healthy people. And for diabetics, this effect is magnified.
So they might then need changes in their insulin regimen or changes in their diabetes medication. If they're in the hospital, obviously their providers in the hospital will be taking care of these things. But if they're recovering from COVID at home, they need to be very careful in checking their blood glucose very frequently and then be in communication with their doctors as well.
She says that such drastic changes in blood sugar levels could cause long-term complications if not managed carefully.
Well, we realized quite early on in the pandemic, during the course of the pandemic, that there was a bidirectional relationship between COVID and diabetes.
Dr. Francisco Rubino is a professor at King's College London. In a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine, he and other healthcare professionals noted that the severe insulin resistance caused by COVID might have another shocking effect.
Even people who didn't have any history of diabetes coming up to the hospital with clear signs of having diabetes.
Rubino says data is still limited, but there seems to be cases, and he set up a global registry called COVID-DIAP to track them. Back at her lab at Indiana University, Dr. Evans-Molina's team studied pancreatic cells of patients who passed away from COVID, and she says they did not see evidence of the virus being able to cause new onset diabetes.
And I think we're really early in our understanding of that.
She notes that managing COVID patients requires the use of steroids, which cause elevated blood sugar levels. That's one of many factors that could have damaging effects on diabetics or someone with pre-diabetes.
So we know that we're probably seeing people who are very close to a diagnosis pass over that threshold and become diagnosed with diabetes.
Back home with her kids, Walston says that as a diabetic, this year has been rough physically and emotionally.
The best thing about 2020, not dying.
Doctors and scientists are working to understand the relationship between COVID-19 and diabetes. With rates of diabetes and pre-diabetes in the U.S. reaching epidemic levels, that's crucial to protect millions of Americans who are at the highest risk.
Why were you freaking out?
Because I didn't want my mom to die.
I wouldn't want my mom to die either.
For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Farah Yusri.
Next week, we'll examine the way clinicians are handling COVID's impact on blood sugar. This reporting is supported by the GBH Educational Foundation through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman.
Tammy Silverman's the President and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. She comes out with monthly columns and of different topics, but we're still on the topic, of course, of the big topic of 2020, which, of course, is the COVID-19 pandemic and still being home for the holidays. That's part of the title for this month's column. First off, Tammy, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio today.
My pleasure. It's great to be with you, and thanks for having me again.
Well, we have this issue, as you mentioned, still home for the holiday, and I guess we're trying to look at more ways that we can help support not only our other family members, but our young people in particular as we're dealing through the break.
You bet. And like everything else, obviously this break is going to be a little different than every other one. And so while our kids often look forward to those holiday breaks, you know, with everything from vacation from school and sleeping late and sometimes extra treats, and usually it also involves getting together with family and friends. Again, this year is going to be a little bit different.
When you go through the information that you all have available at the IYI to be able to come up with some of the ideas that will help Hoosier families and Hoosier parents out to be able to let their youngsters be able to better deal with life, what are some of your sources and what do they happen to particularly say about this issue of still being stuck at home, so to speak?
Sure. A couple of things is that even though they might not say it, kids really like routines, and they do best if you kind of stick to some routine. And that is especially true when you're talking about sleep schedules. So while it may be tempting, you know, and particularly those teens start to need a little more sleep where they want to sleep in or have no time that they need to get up, actually most of the experts from social workers to psychologists to pediatricians suggest don't let them sleep too long. Don't let them vary it. Some say within an hour of their normal time. Some say with no more than 2 hours. So if their normal wake-up time on a school day is 7, you might be able to adjust that to 8, occasionally even to 9. Don't go too much further than that.
Also, I guess just getting together and doing some of the routine things that you normally would do during the holiday season probably is a good idea. I know we can't completely abandon everything just because of the pandemic and because we have to stay at home.
Sure, sure. Well, and think about that with your own kids. You know, there are fun things that you might be able to do even remotely. You know, if you're going to bake cookies or wrap gifts, maybe you can Zoom with somebody else in your family that's doing that or talk to them on the phone or whatever that thing may be. The other thing to think about is a lot of those moments, even though your kids aren't in school and they don't want, you know, you don't need to do structured lessons or anything like that. But there are a lot of those things that we do day in, day out with kids that are teaching moments and activities. Again, whether that's baking, whether that's talking about budgeting for gifts, whether that's, you know, talking about, you know, those things that are math and finance that are part of our daily lives that may be those teachable moments that we can infuse in without saying, okay, we're going to sit down and do school over break.
Can we also find ways to take care of ourselves as well as we think about others? Because we are supposed to do that during this holiday season anyway.
You bet. And, you know, we know that right now there is there are so many hardships that have been related to the pandemic. And so many people have lost a family member. They might have lost a job. There's financial stress. There's food insecurity. Make sure we actually shouldn't hide those realities from our kids. We should talk to them about how do we help care for our neighbors and our communities. And that may be dropping things off at the food bank rather than volunteering inside the food bank. But there's still things that we can do that let our kids know that it's important that we care about one another.
Are we finding that maybe in a way, although you wouldn't necessarily think so because of a pandemic and all, but it might be easier to be able to do things, to think of other people during this particular season because of all the problems we have in being able to get around to do stuff?
Absolutely. We're not as busy, right? We're not as busy as we usually are running to those, you know, musical performances or maybe sporting events or whatever those activities. So you're absolutely right, Chris. It's a great time to turn those energies to thinking about other people and thinking about how we might be able to do something kind that's outside of our own normally hectic schedules.
One of the things I know that we typically tend to do during this time of year is to donate to organizations. That's still always going to be the case, but you mentioned about finding ways to help the nonprofits maybe different ways that would not necessarily mean that you have to particularly individually volunteer, but you ought to at least support them some way. Are there ways out there to be able to do that and to be able to teach your children to follow the procedure and the tradition then?
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, a couple of things. One, you can always ask what would help them most, right? Mm-hmm. If you pick up the phone or shoot an email off to one of these entities, they might need help. Maybe your student is really good on social media, and there can be some positive things there. Maybe they can put up a few posts about donating to the food bank or helping distribute food at this time, you know, through drive-through items and that kind of thing. So again, think outside the budget, but also ask those questions directly to the organizations, or if you have, you know, if you want to reach out to your United Way, they often have a really good pulse, as do the community foundations, to see and ask that question of how can we most help right now.
Are there ways that we can, we've of course been talking about this in a way all through the pandemic, about ways to talk to your young people about the issues that we face here, the isolation, the issues of not being able to be with friends and family members in particular that are at risk now. They have to be separated because of the virus still out there. Are we finding ways that we're able to help make sure that young people know it's not only important to help others, but to keep themselves healthy as well?
You bet. And, you know, it's getting colder, right? And we know that. But getting outside, sometimes those simple physical activities, kids are used to getting fresh air. They're used to getting physical exertion, whether they're walking around their school or whether that's through gym class or after school activities. But we know that getting outside and doing anything, just even a walk around the block, even for a little bit of time, can really be helpful. Kids need that physical outlet for their energy, and it doesn't have to be really big and complicated in order to accomplish that.
Now, is there anything else that's available to see on the IYI website to get some tips, some other major sources that maybe, of course, certainly from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, maybe from like the American Academy of Pediatrics that family members and parents in particular ought to check out?
You bet. Those are two of our most preferred sources, right? We know they're really reliable. Actually, the American Academy of Pediatrics has a great little infographic and some information around it on tips to stay chill during the hectic holiday season. So that's really helpful. And then the CDC also has resources for talking to our kids about the pandemic. Because again, we know that this year is going to be a little different. Break's going to look different. And we also know that it's normal for kids to have a range of emotions about that, including disappointment, anger, sadness, all of those things are perfectly normal.
Tammy Silverman's president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. And Tammy, as always, thank you very much. The best of the holidays to you and everybody at the IYI. And we'll be back talking again in the new year, to be sure. And hopefully we'll have something a little bit different to talk about instead of being stuck still at home. Thank you for being with us.
You bet.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.